This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
And the Oscar goes to Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
Hello, and welcome to Time Sensitive, a film podcast exploring the best and worst under-the-radar movies released in the past 18 months. I'm Sam, and I'm here with my good friend and co-host, Ian.
Shalom! Hello, and welcome to the show! The votes are in, history has been cemented, and a whole slew of new Academy Award winners are cuddling up with their Oscars as we speak.
Yes.
As we do here on Time Sensitive, we set you up last week with the final notes before the 95th Oscar ceremony, and this week, we recap everything, everywhere, all at once.
Oh, that was well played.
Thank you. Everything that you may or may not have missed, if you've been living under a rock this past week, please know that this is your spoiler alert.
Ooh, you got to do the alert today.
You've been alerted.
Oh, I love it.
We're actually going to go through the winners. So if you missed it and you're like Sam 5 years ago and you didn't watch for the sake of this podcast, now is the time to have things told to you.
It sure is. Mm-hmm. If you are new to Time Sensitive, however, welcome. And if you're a returning listener, welcome back.
Our show is unique. We like to review movies not immediately upon their release like most podcasts do, but one last time, about a year or so later, before they disappear into the history books.
And we focus on those movies that might have fallen through the cracks, not the major blockbusters or the billion-dollar grossers, but the quality cinema swimming just beneath the surface.
And when we aren't reviewing those under-the-radar movies, we find fun topics in the film industry to discuss.
Whether it's comedy specials, short films, like today, the Oscars,
ta-da!
Trailer reactions, movie news, or just things we're into, we do it for a laugh and to help you learn a thing or two.
Well, Sam and I had the opportunity, the pleasure, really,
yes,
to watch the Oscars ceremony together again
for
another year, for the 20th year in a row, actually. Alongside some of our favorite time-sensitive hosts.
So many great guests.
Our friends. So many great guests. It was a plethora of guests.
Many as we could cram into my small living room.
Right, there were eight of us.
Yeah.
A good time was had by all.
Yes.
Some had a little bit better time than others, Sam.
Yeah, I didn't realize this until the end of the evening, but I got quite drunk. I had a few drinks. We popped the champagne as we were getting midway through the show.
I specifically recall saying we should wait until the best director, but no, Sam insisted the champagne bottles be popping.
Yeah, we got to pop the corks
at hour one.
Yeah, I wanted to do it as the show was starting, and everybody's like, no, that's an end of show kind of thing.
Because it was
like,
8 o'clock in the evening.
If you say so. It's not like it was like 4 p.m. We were well on our way to drinking. At least I was.
It was 5 o'clock somewhere.
And then I had some bourbon as well that night. I didn't really realize I had a little bit to drink. Mm-hmm. And I woke up with a little bit of a hangover. So that's the sign of a good night, Ian.
Yeah, you wouldn't be the only person in the industry to wake up with a hangover the next day.
Exactly.
Jamie Lee Curtis is still hungover.
I didn't end up with any hardware, though, unfortunately.
Oh, that's too bad. We had a couple of fake Oscars in the room, but that didn't feel as cool.
Oh, well. I liked it.
Well, I mean, it wasn't as good as like a real one is what I meant.
Sure, yes.
Our aesthetic of the space was wonderful.
Yes.
You did a great job getting decorations from the
dollar plenty
store.
Of snacks, all that kind of fun
the
stuff.
The food was good. It's how Oscar parties should be done, and it was a blast.
I agree.
Well, unlike the Oscars, we'd like to keep this episode to a tight 3 hours, so let's waste no time. We'll start with the headline, the biggest award of the night, Best Picture. We're going to recap all the awards for you, talk about some of our favorite moments, the good, the bad, the ugly of the ceremony. It's all coming at you. So let's just give a reminder of our Best Picture nominees. Mm-hmm. All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar, The Way of Water, The Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fablemans, Tar, Top Gun Maverick, Triangle of Sadness, and Women Talking. And Sam, the winner was
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Of course it was.
Yeah.
We predicted it. We knew it was coming.
Definitely expected. It was still cool to see.
Very cool. Very cool. You heard the actual announcement at the beginning of this episode, but really cleaned up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It took home just about everything.
Yeah. 7 of 11.
Yeah.
Great restaurant. 7 of 11 nominations. The most nominated film of the night took home 7. We're going to talk about some of the major wins that it had in a little bit. But just to give you a brief recap, most of the Best Picture nominees went home with nothing.
So many of them.
Banshees of Inisherin, your favorite movie of the group, went home empty-handed, 0 for 9.
Nothing.
0 for 9.
Yeah.
Ouch.
That's tough because a lot of it was in the acting categories and they didn't stand a chance.
Right. Yeah. They're competing against themselves.
That too.
In a category that Ki-Hui Kwan was highly favored to win. And then, of course, Elvis, another big donut on the board for Elvis, which we expected it to bring a couple of technical categories in, at least for Catherine Martin, who was going for her three-peat of costume design and production design, was shut out from both, and Austin Butler didn't win. We'll talk about that race in a second. Fablemans, which I think, Sam, if I recall, you called it this year's Irishman, predicting it would have 0 wins,
and I did.
You were right.
I was exactly right, and I'm so happy that I was.
I'm happy that you were right, too. The movie was trash.
Yes.
Pure trash. We then had one of my favorites and my number one pick of the 10 after changing my vote from the last time we recorded.
Yeah, we have some changes in our picks after recording because we watched a lot more movies.
I reserved the right to change. I had seen some of them by the time we recorded, but not all of them, and then I went back and thought about some more.
Mm-hmm.
Tar was actually my number one of the 10.
Wow.
After thinking about it longer, and it went home with 0. We will think back on this day and remember that Tar got 0 and think, what the hell were people thinking?
Yeah. I feel the same way about Manchies. I was like, people are going to forget about this movie, and I never will.
Well, maybe we'll do an episode on it so that people don't forget about it.
Yeah.
We should do that. Top Gun Maverick, Triangle of Sadness also ends up the night with 0, but that was predicted.
Yeah.
Didn't expect Ruben Östlund to bring anything out. But the other films that did take home some hardware, Women Talking, was a small picture with a Best Picture nomination. Ended up winning for Best Adapted Screenplay for its writer-director, Sarah Pauly, the first and only win for that film of 2 nominations. Top Gun Maverick, the big box office smash, picks up 1 for Best Sound. We then, speaking of another box office smash, picking up a technical award, Avatar The Way of Water, picks up 1 for visual effects, which again was
everybody expected.
Yes, everyone expected that. But then perhaps the biggest surprise of the night.
This was a surprise.
Was All Quiet on the Western Front picks up 4 wins of its 9 nominations, which it was highly favored to win Best International Feature. That was kind of, and I think we talked about this at our Oscar party. No film in history that is of international descent that's been nominated for Best Picture has ever lost the international feature category.
Oh, yeah, that makes
sense. So the odds were favored there, but it won cinematography.
Mm-hmm.
It won Best Sound, or excuse me, it won Best Score, which was a big shock for a lot.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping Babylon on that one.
Yeah, yeah, big shocking win there. So really impressive for Germany coming out with 4 big wins, and Netflix, of course, picking up 4 wins.
Mm-hmm.
But the studio that everyone was talking about was A24.
Shocking.
Just destroying the competition.
Yeah.
In every possible way, but Everything Everywhere takes home the prize for Best Picture. We'll talk more about some of its history-making wins in a second.
Yes,
but let's talk about Best Director.
Best Director.
We all predicted the Daniels. This was an easy one to pick for them to win, and they both ended up winning. Not just one of them. Both Daniels
and
won.
And they both came up and talked about it.
They had 3 opportunities to basically say the same thing, and they actually used each one of their platforms really, really well.
They did.
Reminiscent of Bong Joon-ho winning in multiple categories and being able to share a different narrative each time. That was really enriching. But they're both 35 years old, so we have 5 years to win our Oscar. Their second film together, even though it's not their first film overall, their second film as a directing pair, and we both predicted this one right. We both thought they were going to get it. Which is pretty cool. And they kind of made history here by being only the 3rd directing pair to ever win this category.
That's so cool.
They're the 5th pair ever nominated, but they're the 3rd to win. First was Robert Wise and Jerome Robbins for West Side Story in 1961. And then our good friends, the Coen brothers, won for No Country for Old Men about 15 years ago.
Wow, that's so long ago.
An elite company, one might say.
Yes.
But pretty impressive for the 2 of them. And they were a riot and great speeches across the board. So let's get into where some of the surprises might have been, perhaps, and where the history was really made. So let's start with our supporting acting category, Sam. So again, just a reminder, 16 of the 20 nominees, of our 20 acting nominees, were first ever nominees.
So cool.
So cool. All 4 winners were first time winners, which is super cool as well. So let's start with supporting actress again. I want to just say that as the recording, I had originally said Angela Bassett was going to win because she did the thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I changed it. I made sure to correct to check with you before the ceremony began.
I actually made a change and I forgot to tell you on one of them.
Okay.
Not on any of the acting, but it was for one of the screenplays after witnessing one of the movies. I made a change.
Okay. We'll get to that in a second. Yes. Let's not rush things. We have 3 hours.
We have so much time.
But I originally said Angela Bassett. You said Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yes.
Presumably after her late in the game SAG Award win.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. That's the main reason I picked her.
Which ultimately ended up being the magic recipe because she was the second win for Everything Everywhere All at Once of the night. Mm-hmm. It was a weird structure because we start with best supporting performance, either actor or actress. But we started with best animated feature. I think I like how they did it. Kind of they went with the biggest locks up front because everyone knew Guillermo del Toro was going to win for animated feature.
Yeah, he was already standing on stage when they announced him.
This felt like discrimination to me. It's like, okay.
You don't have a fucking chance.
Well, it was like, okay, you're going to win. And how long is it going to take you to get from your spot way in the back of the theater up front?
He was by a wall. He was so far back.
But I thought that was a smart choice. They're trying to save time however they can. But Jamie Lee Curtis does end up winning this one, first Oscar for her as the daughter of two former Oscar nominees.
Which she tells you in her speech.
Which is cool. I mean, a lot of people don't know that history about her.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched a really great thing of her. She did one of those Vanity Fair Describe My Career things.
Cool.
She's a fascinating lady.
Yeah.
And she has just been genre acting her entire career.
Mm-hmm.
And I just love everything about her. I think she's awesome. I didn't think she was the best performance of the year.
Yeah. I think a lot of people question that one, but it is a cool win. And what more can you ask from the Oscars than give you a good story?
Right. So. And it really set the stage for us because Ki-Hui Kwan won right before her. Mm-hmm. And then she went, they did both supporting acting performances very early in the night back-to-back.
Yeah, each pair that came out to announce the awards did two.
Yeah.
And it was usually the last year's winner in each category.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about how they subverted tradition to get around assaults in a second. But it was a big win for
everybody. Everybody had a buddy.
Everyone
they played the buddy system.
They really did. Making sure no one was up there unattended to. But let's quick. I already mentioned it. I already spoiled it. Supporting actor, of course, Ki-Hui Kwan.
Yep, which we both predicted.
I mean, that was one of the easiest locks of the night. Mm-hmm. Everyone saw it coming. Even though Barry Keoghan is incredible,
so good.
And I love the Judd Hirsch love that they gave. He got a couple of seconds in the monologue, which was good. That's all he needed. But let's move on to where it was a little bit more competitive, the two major acting categories. We'll start with Best Actress because we're already in the Everything Everywhere All at Once mode.
Uh-huh.
So this one was really kind of a toss-up going in because Cate Blanchett had all the favor in the early awards, and then Michelle Yeoh picked up this with the wind of the Everything Everywhere All at Once narrative and started carrying that all the way through. And she actually ended up taking the prize, even though we both predicted her to do so.
Yes, we did. And I was so excited that she was able to get that win. She had a great speech.
Mm-hmm.
It was an awesome moment.
Really cool to witness. And I kind of thinking back on it now, should have thought that after Jamie Lee Curtis won, that of course Michelle Yeoh was going to, like, there was no, I'm not saying that Jamie Lee Curtis was like an if. The reason I would say this, because if we're going to award someone from that movie, the Oscars aren't going to give it to the one white lady in the entire cast and not
the other two.
Mm-hmm. And not that, like, not because we're not doing like DEI and this is like inclusivity everything, but you can't award a movie that's about the Asian experience and only award the white lady.
Right.
It would just be so bad.
That would be horrible, but typical Oscars.
It wouldn't be off par. It wouldn't be par for the course, really.
I do want to mention that Ana de Armas in her movie Blonde did not go unawarded that night. It also won the Razzie for Worst Picture.
Wow.
The same night.
What an honor. Not since Sandra Bullock in The Blind Side has that been the situation. No, but that's funny. I'm glad you mentioned that. But let's get to then one of the other major stories of the night.
Yes.
Best Actor. This was down to two. We had talked about it on the show last week. Colin Farrell was kind of out. He didn't win the BAFTA, which is where he was expected to win, so he really had no chance.
Right.
This was a two-person race down to Austin Butler for Elvis and Brendan Fraser for The Whale. Now, do you remember what I told you last week, the hint to how we could find out who was going to win this one?
Ooh.
Clearly, you don't listen to a single fucking thing I say.
I edit this show. I don't listen to it.
Maybe I didn't even say it on the show.
I don't remember. I don't remember.
I said, pay attention to best makeup and hairstyling.
Oh.
Because that was going to be our indicator, because both The Whale and Elvis were nominated in the category. Mm-hmm. And really, both movies are dependent upon the makeup and hairstyling of their two lead characters. Mm-hmm. So we could then assume that whoever wins makeup and hairstyling would correlate directly to the best actor race.
Which it did.
I was stupidly went against my own advice and said that Elvis was going to win best makeup and hairstyling and that Brendan Fraser would still win. And ultimately he did. Mm-hmm. The correlation ended up proving true, even though I didn't listen to myself. And we both predicted this one as well.
We did. Yes. It did feel, I know they weren't necessarily locks, but it did feel like the acting categories had kind of played themselves into one specific winner.
They solidified really, really strongly after the SAG Awards.
Yeah.
Which is funny because the night of the SAGs, I remember everyone kind of going, well, what the fuck's happening now? Because all the SAG winners were different than all the BAFTA winners for the first mm-hmm. time in a long time. So everyone's like, okay, this has thrown everything up for a loop. But ultimately, the SAG Awards, the SAG winners ended up prevailing overall to mm-hmm. the Oscar, which was super cool. I think Brendan Fraser gave a wonderful performance in
Did
the
you
Whale.
End up seeing since the last time we recorded?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right. I hadn't seen it by the time. Yes. Loved this movie. No one that I watched it with liked it. They all did not like it. But I was incredibly moved by it.
Wow.
I thought Hong Chau was wonderful.
That's fantastic.
And the really a great heartbeat to the movie. So that was really sad to think about how Kerry Condon and Hong Chau gave my two favorite supporting performances of the category, and neither one of them were even in the conversation.
Right.
So that was kind of disappointing. And speaking of amazing performances, Cate Blanchett, again, we will look back on this 10 years from now and say, why did she not win? Mm-hmm. Not that Michelle Yeoh was undeserving, but just like in any other year, Cate Blanchett would have walked away with this.
Right.
Okay. Walked away with it. So let's close out our above-the-line categories and talk about our screenplays.
Yes.
So tell us, how did things go down, Sam?
So we had our adapted screenplay winner is Sarah Polley's Women Talking.
Right.
Which, Ian, you got that one right. You changed it after a recording.
I think
you said All Quiet on the Western Front was going to win on our recording.
Because I hadn't seen Women Talking at the time.
Exactly. And I felt the same way. I picked Glass Onion. Mm-hmm. And then I saw Women Talking the day before the ceremony. And I was like, oh, shit, this is great.
Oh, shit, this is really good.
I did not expect it to be. And I also voted for Women Talking day of. And that's what took it home.
Yeah. Shout out to Women Talking for landing on Amazon Prime the night before the Oscars.
So we could
all watch it. Now, I was a little nervous watching the ceremony when All Quiet started to win more than was expected. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this might be problematic here.
Sure.
And I was ready to take this one and like say that, you know what, I changed my vote and I was wrong. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know, it should have been All Quiet, but Women Talking prevails, sole win for that movie this year, and really, really well-deserved, great screenplay.
And then for original screenplay, the winner was Everything Everywhere All at Once, mm-hmm. which I predicted.
Yes.
You picked Banshees of Inisherin.
I was misled.
Yeah. It did seem like that if it was going to win one Oscar, that would be it. And honestly, I'm a little disappointed that it didn't.
I really did not expect this one to get completely shut out.
Yeah.
I thought either Kerry Condon was going to pull through or it was going to come here in original screenplay. I should have paid attention to the Writers Guild, which gave it to Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Right, right.
But I thought everyone's going to give, you know, there were so many other ways to award everything that I thought Banshees would pick up one thing here. Because it kind of becomes the garbage disposal of the awards. Like, if you're not going to get something anywhere else, here's a chance to award a really good movie. Which is, I think, Women Talking broke too late in the race to get other nominations because we both said Claire Foy was incredible.
Yeah, she deserved a nomination.
She was amazing. And that's hard to do in an ensemble of women.
Exactly.
And she stood out by far among her co-stars.
Also, in the trailer, they show way too much Frances McDormand. She's in like 4 minutes of that movie.
You know, this is the thing I love about this year's Best Picture race is we could do a lot of these movies on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Because a lot of them are really under the radar. Mm-hmm. I'm sure very few people have even seen Women Talking. We hadn't even before we recorded the last one. Banshees, I think, would be fun just because it's basically under the radar, clearly, because it didn't
now
win anything.
Now it is, yeah.
And I would love to do The Whale. I think that would be such a good movie for us to talk about.
But I'm in for it.
We shall see.
It seems like a more approachable Aronofsky film that we can jump into.
It's better than Mother, which we proposed before.
Oh, God.
Okay, so that kind of rounds out the Big Eight. We won't go through the rest, but tell us, Sam, how did you do overall in your predictions? 23 categories you got.
I got 13.
Nice, respectable.
I'm kind of disappointed. I've had better years for sure. I think what really killed me is some of the smaller categories. I wasn't entirely sure what the favorite was, so mm-hmm. I didn't do my research on that front of things. But overall, I'm pretty proud of how it turned out.
Yeah, well, you beat me in our and on the Big Eight.
I did, yes.
Which was unexpected.
Usually is. You usually crush me in some of these things.
I did end up getting 17 out of 23.
Nice.
Overall. Impressive. But I will happily bow to you for picking Everything Everyone Wants for original screenplay.
Thank you.
That was a stupid mistake on my part. And here, this is, you know, I even made this announcement the last time. I said I wasn't going to be 1917 again. I was always going to go with the progressive choice, and I let myself down.
Yeah, that hurts. Although, with your 1917, the war movie did real well this year.
It sure did. Yeah. It sure did. I mean, 1917 did really well, too, technically.
That's true.
But I think All Quiet would not, I don't think, would have gotten the support that it did had it not been international, had it not been Netflix.
That's fair. Easy to access.
Right. And Netflix made it available early, mm-hmm. so it's been part of the race for a long time.
True.
And the BAFTAs was a total shock. That was really what kind of, I think, there was a lot of support there that we didn't see. And when I say we, the pundits didn't see that support until it overtook Banshees and was like, oh, this movie's a little bit higher up on people's list than we thought.
Yeah. And honestly, I think it might have been the Golden Globes, although the Golden Globes shouldn't be relevant at all. All Quiet lost to Argentina in 1985. Yes. When RRR and All Quiet were in the category and we're like, oh, well, is it just going to disappear then? And then clearly it did not.
Yeah. So clearly the Golden Globes mean nothing.
Yeah. Good.
Yes. Well, let's talk about the good, the bad, the ugly from this Oscar ceremony. Let's start by just with our favorite win. What was your favorite win overall of the night?
My favorite win of the night, I love RRR. That's,
I thought that was what you were going to pick.
Thought it was going to pick that too, but I actually went with Navalny. I didn't expect this to win. I didn't realize that it was the favorite. Yeah, I thought it was going to go to All the Beauty and the Bloodshed, the art documentary.
Yes, the Berlin winner.
Yeah, Berlin mm-hmm. winner, and it also deals with the opioid crisis, so a lot of topical things, mm-hmm. But it instead went to Navalny and everybody going up there, and the speech was great, mm-hmm. followed by the family members walking up with their awards, speaking mm-hmm. directly to Alexei, who mm-hmm. is currently in prison. Obviously, he's probably not going to hear that speech.
He's got his TiVo set. He'll get it later.
But it was really quite moving.
A powerful night in a lot of ways. And I think the Academy is looking for ways to make this Ukraine story again relevant mm-hmm. in Russia's dominance over there. And it was, you know, it came out earlier in the week that Zelensky had asked to be a guest on the Oscars.
Really?
Like the Grammys allowed him to do that, I believe, last year, the year before.
Yeah.
But the Academy said no. And of course, they don't want to make it political.
Sure.
My ass. But I thought this was a good way to bring light to things again.
It was, yeah.
And it was done in a way that was celebratory of the craft of the movie, but also in recognition of his sacrifice and his family's sacrifice.
Yeah.
So really well done.
No doubt about it, too. It is a really well-made documentary, and I think it does have one of the most shocking moments. If you don't know the story, one mm-hmm. of the most shocking moments in all of cinema this past year.
Wow. That's high praise.
Yeah.
Might have to do an episode on that one, too.
Maybe.
So many episode ideas coming from the Oscars this year. Well, my favorite win of the night, we've already talked about, original screenplay for Sarah Polley, mostly because I hated the book.
Yes.
And this, I'm safe to say, the movie is better than the book.
Wow. And Kate refused to watch with me.
I know.
Because she's like, the book is terrible. I'm not going to sit through an hour and 44 minutes of just that book. And as I paused it about midway through, and I'm like, am I missing something? Because this is good. Like, this is really, really good. Mm-hmm. And it's got to be just the performances bringing these characters to life.
Well, it has to be, because all it is women sitting in a room and talking to each other.
Yeah.
Friend of the show and former guest Mike Ingram said, if not for All Quiet on the Western Front, women talking would be his favorite of the time.
Wow, that's high praise,
yes,
too.
Yes, very much so. So let's talk a little bit about the history making of Everything Everywhere at Once, which I think is a major win for this year's ceremony. Of course, Michelle Yeoh, winning Best Actress, becomes only the second woman of color in the history of the Academy Awards to win Best Actress.
Wow.
So let's not confuse this, though. Other women of color have won other awards in acting categories.
And supporting.
Supporting acting categories. And other women from what could be considered Asian countries have won before. Mm-hmm. Like Natalie Portman, who's from Israel, won Best Actress. But the clearly way to define this is Michelle Yeoh is the second woman of color to win behind Halle Berry from Monsters Ball way back in 2001. It's been a long time, 21 years since she last won. And it was fitting that she was able to present it to her as well.
That was cool.
And I don't know about you, but I was a little nervous we were going to have a Chadwick Boseman moment here if it didn't go her way. Luckily, it did. And I think they kind of mitigated that by doing the pairing with Jessica Chastain.
Yes.
It worked really well.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Another history-making thing for Everything Everywhere All at Once is three acting awards. This is only the third film to ever get three wins in the acting categories, and the only in history to also get Best Picture with those three acting wins.
Wow.
So 1951, we had A Streetcar Named Desire, the Tennessee Williams adaptation.
Which makes sense. I actually watched that a couple years ago,
really?
I think, because we did an episode on movies we hadn't seen before or like that, and I watched it in... It makes sense that it won all the acting awards because they act the shit out of it.
And who, you know who didn't win?
Was it Brando?
Brando didn't win.
Wow.
Yeah. Of those four, he was the one who didn't win. They match the same wins that Everything got. So actress and the two supportings.
Okay.
And then Network years later won three as well. So nice. Everything is the only one, only the third in this history of threes.
Wow.
Lots of threes going on, trifecta here. And the biggest thing, though, to point out of the night, six above the line wins, which when we refer to above the line, you've heard us reference the Big Eight on the show before.
Yes.
That's the screenplay categories, the acting categories, director, and picture.
Mm-hmm.
Everything Everywhere All at Once is the first movie in the history of the Academy Awards to win six of those eight.
Wow.
That's more than Silence of the Lambs.
That's
more than Titanic. It's a big deal. Big deal.
All for A24. I love it.
All for A24, again, one of the first, I think, if not the first studio to sweep the acting categories. Because Brendan Fraser won.
Oh, that's true. The Whale's A24.
Right. So I think if I'm remembering correctly, first studio to ever sweep all four acting categories.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Big night for A24. Just with those two films, nine wins.
Wow.
Nine wins of 23 went to one studio. Pretty impressive. Even though the ceremony was trying to tell us that it was Disney's product.
How dare you?
We'll talk about that in a second.
Get out of here, ABC.
We'll talk about that. But another good thing in my mind, Sam, Jimmy Kimmel.
Yes.
Funny, well-written. Louis Fertel wrote most of the jokes, so you have to give him credit for that. He's great. But I thought he came out. We had a little fun thing running in the party on Sunday night.
Yes.
Was when would the first Will Smith joke drop? And we were all way too early.
We didn't expect the montage at the beginning of the Oscars.
No, that threw us all off.
Yeah.
And then he didn't bring it up until the end of his monologue. I thought it was going to be his first joke.
Yeah.
But it was not. And my favorite line he had of the whole night was, if anything unpredictable or violent happens during the ceremony, just do what you did last year. Nothing.
Oh, so good.
Such a hard-hitting line.
Yes.
Loved it.
And honestly, I enjoyed his hosting because he didn't try too many gimmicks. That's what I haven't liked about Jimmy Kimmel hosting in the past.
Right.
Is bringing that audience from the movie theater into... the Oscars theater in front of all the famous people and people trying to get selfies with them. I was like, I don't need this shit. Like it kept the pace going while still being entertaining. And that's what was pretty great about this.
And it's funny. He kept coming back to beat Will Smith over the head.
Yeah.
Which was, you know,
over and over.
Right. In comedy, you say do it once, do it twice, do it three times. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's funny. He just kept going. And that's what made it even funnier.
Mm-hmm.
It just, he never let up.
Well, and during his monologue, we're like, oh, that was a pretty tasteful, like, way not
he didn't even mention him by name.
Not to mention him. And like, that was one of his first, or one of his jokes late in his monologue. And then he kept going. And then going. And then going, and then like the monologue ended with it. And I was like, wow, that was a lot.
And I love how he closed the show with the day since last incident at the Oscars. He turns it to one. That was great. Loved everything about that. He was really impressive because that could have easily been a really unfortunate mark. And any other host would have kind of either poo-pooed it and tried, like not gone around it.
Yeah, or, pretend it doesn't exist.
Right, or gone way overboard with it and made everyone in the room uncomfortable because they are all to blame in some way or fashion. So I love that he called them out with the line I just mentioned, but then kept hitting back Because really, there's nothing to stop him, right?
Yes.
There's no reason that he can't do it.
Exactly.
And everyone in the room was in on the joke.
Yeah, and it wasn't too harsh. It didn't last too long either. Right.
So he never referred to him by name.
Exactly.
He kept referring, come up on stage and we'll get jiggy with it.
Yeah.
I think he said, tonight we'll go off without a hitch or without the hitch. Or
exactly. Yeah. He did that too. Yeah. And he said, if someone does do anything violent, we'll award you with the best actor and then proceed to allow you to have a 19-minute speech.
Yeah. So he did everything but, which I thought was just really well done.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll talk a second about one of the moments that I thought was a little ugly, but again, not to blame him in the process.
Okay.
What else stood out to you as a really good or one of your favorite parts of the night?
Yes. So I mentioned RRR.
Yes.
We need to talk about it.
We've done a whole episode on it if you want to hear us talk about it.
We need to talk about it more. But it won best original song for Natu Natu, and there was a live performance of it. I was so curious to how this would work.
Because
it seems like such a hard song to perform live compared to the stand and belt it out type songs that were nominated.
Was that shade at Rihanna?
That's shade at everybody.
Okay.
But I thought it somehow worked. Like, it wasn't quite as good as it is in the movie, and I don't think they could have done it as well as it was in the movie.
Because
I still get goosebumps when I watch that scene.
Yeah.
But the dancing was so much fun. It was filmed really well. I think we have some thoughts on zoom-ins. There might have been a few too many zoom-ins. But it worked. And it seemed like everybody was enjoying it.
And for a hot second, we thought it was the actual actress from the movie dancing.
We did for a moment. And quickly on one of the zoom-ins, we recognized, no, that's not them.
And honestly, that's not us being racist against Indian folks.
They got good.
They looked almost exactly like the Ram Charan guy looked almost just like him.
Yeah.
And then the guy actually that was singing, one of the songwriters, actually looked a lot like the other lead actor from the movie. So it was a little scary for a second.
Whoa, that would have been amazing.
That's what I was hoping it was going to be, but then they never announced them as performers. So
right.
But there was a lot of Indian cinema call-outs throughout the night. Because not only did they get to perform, and they got a standing ovation from the performance, but Jimmy Kimmel made a joke with them dancing people off in the opening monologue.
Yes, that was good.
Which was great. And then one of your favorite shorts of the year, The Elephant Whisperer, won.
It did win, and that's a beautiful movie, and I didn't even pick it to win. I picked the other Netflix documentary, the
Stranger at the Gate.
Nope, Martha.
Oh, you picked Martha Mitchell to win.
I picked the Martha Mitchell one to win.
Okay.
Stranger at the Gate, I think, is on YouTube. I think it might be
right,
a New York
Times
one. Also, really powerful.
Yeah.
I honestly forgotten what it was about. I'd watched it so long ago. But yeah, I was really excited to see The Elephant Whisperer win.
Just good representation across the board for India to come out. They had a number of Bollywood stars that presented throughout the night, which is really cool connection. One of them was like the highest paid actress in Bollywood presented. I think she presented the RRR performance.
Yes.
Like introduced it. So there's a lot of love there, which I don't know why it's taken Hollywood so long to embrace this huge film market other than its competition. But this was really cool to see that merging. And it brings up this question for me, because I there was a conversation that started on Twitter, of course, where all great conversations begin, about how the Academy has gone too far in trying to bring in international voices. And this is not a conversation about, isolationism or nationalism. It's more a conversation about how every other country has their own version of the Oscars, right? The BAFTAs, they have their own. Canada has its own. The argument was basically that the more we embrace stories from outside of the United States, All Quiet, even from Germany winning so many awards, we're diluting somehow the Hollywood industry. And I don't agree with the sentiment there, but I do wonder should there be like in a best American film the way that the BAFTAs have the best British film? What do you think about the topic in general? It gave me pause.
Sure. I guess I haven't thought about it before, but it also makes me think, like, for baseball, we call it the World Series, but all the teams are either in the United States or Canada. And like, if we think that highly of ourselves, because obviously the Academy does think that highly of themselves, I kind of like it that it's kind of the world stage for film.
It's the Olympics of movies.
Exactly.
And it should be.
And there can be those other competitions. How many could you name, like, off the top of your head? And we're not going to know many of them, probably outside of the BAFTAs.
Right.
César
Awards from France.
You're going to know far more than the average person, Ian. I do not know very many of them. And I just think it's really cool to see that we're being far more inclusive than maybe some of these other award shows are.
Right. And I don't think these are inclusive for the sake of inclusivity. They made the best movies that people liked.
I want the 10 nominees for Best Picture to be the 10 best movies of the year. I don't care where it was made.
Right. I agree with you 100%. And if you're going to have the status as the greatest award show of all award shows, you have to let everyone compete.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
I love it.
Thank you for entertaining that conversation just a little bit there. Yeah. So that kind of covers our good. Did you have anything else to talk about on the really positive side?
I have one more, and it's something that they had taken away for a few years, and that was clips of performances of those nominated during the reading of the nominees. It's such a small thing, but especially for people watching that have never seen or heard of the movies, getting even a little snippet of a performance or what the movie is or anything like
What's After Sun?
Exactly. Yeah. Or even the short clips of some of the makeup artists or the cinematography for those categories goes such a long way than a still photo does. And for a few years, they were just using still photos. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this takes away some of the magic of the Oscars.
The Oscars should be a learning experience, too, to learn about the craft and learn about what the industry is. And unfortunately, too much time was taken up by a Disney promotion. But other than it was actually a really cool ceremony to highlight some of those fields that haven't been recognized, especially after they were taken off the show last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the bad now, Sam.
Yes.
Okay, things that were a little uncomfortable, that kind of put us all at a little unease. I think I have an early gripe that's easy across the board. It's a gripe every year of who they omit from the In Memoriam package.
Oh, yeah.
But there were a couple that I thought were pretty big exclusions, considering what else they did throughout the ceremony. Of course, we actually had another little fun game that we played was who could pick the last name in the In Memoriam section. We were all wrong.
Yes.
But at least all of you were actually in there. My pick, Tom Sizemore, was not even mentioned.
I was surprised by that, yeah.
And I, after thinking about it, I was like, okay, he probably shouldn't have been last, but shouldn't at least been on it. And by the way, they have a full list available on their website that you can go and look. A lot of people die every year, and they don't have time to do them all. Mm-hmm. But a couple that really stood out to me, one, Pat Carroll, who played Ursula in The Little Mermaid.
How
are you not going to put her in there when you do a full trailer release
of
the new
one? Yeah.
And have Melissa McCarthy present it, right? That's what her character is based on. So that was a kind of a surprise for me. Yeah. People know who Pat Carroll is. They would recognize her.
Right.
Especially if you did a voice of her, like a little clip of her. Mm-hmm. And then a big one, the lead actress of a Best Picture nominated film.
Yeah, how the heck is she not on there?
And I didn't even notice it when we were watching it at first because I was looking for big names. By the way, Anne Heche wasn't on it either. Mm-hmm. But the lead actress of Triangle Sadness, Charlotte B. Dean, was not even mentioned.
That's wild.
Which is a huge shock to
me.
Even if you didn't recognize who she was, that's a three-time nominated film, and she leads it.
Yeah, that's crazy to me. I'll also say, I think we only got one clip of dialogue during the entire In Memoriam section, and usually that's a great opportunity to throw in just a couple of line readings.
Right.
Like, Ray Liotta passed away, and we didn't get anything from Goodfellas.
Right.
Like, that's the perfect opportunity.
He's an Oscar winner. Yeah. I mean, show the scene that he won for.
Exactly.
Of course, there's always going to be complaints about the In Memoriam package. It's a lot of people in a very short period of time. No one really wants to sit. And that's why I loved last year so much, because it was a celebration. And they had individuals come out and speak to their relationship with the individuals who had passed away.
Yeah.
That was super cool. This ends up being kind of like an afterthought every year. Mm-hmm. And last year, they actually made it a part of the ceremony, which I loved. This, just having Lenny Kravitz play a piano, sure, it was good. Yeah. It was fine. And you can't fit everyone in. I recognize that. But at least, and this might be a little disrespectful, put the faces that people recognize and the voices that people recognize.
Right.
If you're going to, like, no, I don't know an executive producer of a movie from Adam, right?
Yeah.
So, sure, they contributed a lot and they were great, but were they a name or a face people recognize? Leslie Jordan wasn't on it. It's more TV, but still.
Sure, yeah.
You know? So, again, just a common gripe that a lot of people, I'm sure, will have. I'm going to commit an act of sacrilegiousness.
Sacrilege? What you got, Ian?
I was like, I'm going to sack religion. I didn't know what. One of the bad things I thought, dare I say, Gaga's performance.
What? Clutch my pearls.
Let me just say, she was not expected to even be there, let alone perform.
That was a question you had before the ceremony.
Yeah, it was a fun question.
Was, will Gaga make an appearance? And everybody said no, except for you.
Right.
And then literally 3 minutes later, she was on screen on the red carpet.
Well, excuse us, the champagne carpet.
Oh, yes.
But yes, that was kind of a surprise to me because she's filming the new Joker movie in New York.
Yep.
And the rumor, Glenn Weiss, the director of the show, had said, hey, we can't make it work. She's not going to be there. She'll be the only one who's not performing. And then she shows up.
Yeah.
And delivers this really stripped down version of Hold My Hand, which I thought was the best song written for the year. Even though I love Not To Not To, this was like the best song that I loved, and I love her and everything she does. But the performance was super weird. She's basically dressed as a high school like stage manager from a show
all
at
black
high school. Yeah. T-shirt inside out.
Ripped jeans.
No makeup. This is not me saying she needed to be dressed up. I just don't get it. Doesn't fit the story.
Where does that fit into the narrative of the song?
And I recognize, sure, hey, you hit a red eye the morning of and you're there. Let's put something together. You sit there with a piano and a friend and sing the song. However, the reason I love this song and the why it's such a good song for Top Gun Maverick is because it's huge.
Yeah.
It's got big drops of beats in it. It's really loud. Mm-hmm. It's got huge orchestrations behind it. And that just fell completely apart.
Yeah.
And you let Rihanna, who basically sings a lullaby to all of us to sleep, lift me up. It's like four notes. She gave a better performance.
Create so many enemies now.
Are there Rihanna fan? Like Rihanna, what's her name of her people?
I don't know what they are. It's not like the Beehive, but it's got to be close, right?
I mean, it's not her lane. Stay in your lane, honey. Gaga can do it. She can transition over. But the performance was weird. She was flat a lot of it. Gaga was.
Mm-hmm.
I think that just comes from probably not having a rehearsal for the performance.
Sure.
And then the cam was like right up her face.
Yeah,
like I felt
so
like I
close.
Was giving her a nose job. Like it was like I was going to put a ring in her nose or something. I was right there. Super awkward.
Yeah.
Didn't like it. and again, mostly just because if you write a song for a movie, mm-hmm. it's not about why you wrote it for you and your buddy. Like, granted, she gave this whole introduction about how it's so personal to her and all that stuff. You wrote the song for a movie to make money.
Right.
So let's talk about that and have it perform the way that it's in the movie.
Sure. I'm with you on
it. I could be a purist there. Sue me. but speaking of that champagne carpet, I wanted to make a note of it as one of the bad things.
Oh, okay.
Simply because my dad came up to me about 3 or 4 days before the show and said, hey, did you see the Oscars aren't going to use a red carpet anymore?
Ooh.
And I said, where are you getting your Facebook information from? You must be a liar.
What QAnon post was this?
I was like, what random ad did you see on your feed? And it turns out he was right. I have apologized to him in person already. They did not do a red carpet for the first time since 1961.
Wow.
Basically, the showrunner was like, hey, we want to change this up, make this a more formal event. And apparently, the red carpet...
More formal. Well, the Oscars need to be more formal.
Well, but here's the challenge they get. We watch at 8 o'clock, yes, but people are arriving at what is basically 3 o'clock in the afternoon in Los Angeles. So you have the sun, you have really hot weather, you have the sun beating down on people, and you got the most beautiful people in the world wearing some of the most expensive clothing in the world. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to create more of an atmosphere that was more elegant and evening-like. They thought the red carpet makes it seem a little flashy and more like an like it's a fun out with your friends, the red carpet. This was supposed to be more classy all that. I don't really get it. I've heard the people explain why they did it, and I don't understand why. The point was to make it a day event into an evening event. But you're not changing the clock. I mean,
no, it's still sunny.
It's still 3 o'clock in the afternoon. They put a tent over it this time for the first time.
Okay.
To try to get I could see if it was for photos. Let's make the photos better. Mm-hmm. But they washed out half the people there because they all wore skin tone dresses and mm-hmm. stuff. I don't know. That's a stupid thing to gripe about, but I just thought it was weird.
It's worth bringing up, Ian.
Thank you. I've complained enough about Disney and using it as basically the second Super Bowl for advertising their own platform, but that's what you get when you sign a 10-year contract.
Yeah, Little Mermaid stuff was a little over the head.
It was just, what a waste of time that could have been spent doing something different and not cutting off half the people that were awarded things.
Yeah.
That was frustrating. Oh, you're going to cut off the woman who's Indian from speaking about the Elephant Whisperers, but you're going to let 6 white guys talk for the other short that won.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we get
perfect.
Yeah, that's
perfect.
Good. That's good view.
Ugh.
Sam, what else stood out to you?
Yeah.
As a bad thing.
The animated short category, I predicted the winner being The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse,
mm-hmm.
An Apple Plus one. It is the worst movie in the category.
Because you saw all 5 of them.
I did actually see all 5 of them. And it's my least favorite of the 4. It's long. It's the longest, and mm-hmm. it's the most boring. It's beautiful to look at.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a very small child, maybe throw it on. The dialogue is quiet enough that it won't matter. But all the other ones, it showed the ingenuity of the medium of mm-hmm. animation. They were all a little bit different. They were all a little bit weird. And I thought they could have honored something really, really interesting here. And mm-hmm. they went with the safe pick, which is an Apple Plus movie that's just pretty to look at.
And Sam, I think I know which one you would have picked, but can you tell us a little bit more about The Ostrich?
Yeah, the movie, An Ostrich Told Me That the World is Fake, and I Think I Believe Him. And I'm going to spoil this for you if you haven't seen it yet, so pause it and look it up if you want to watch it.
It's 7 minutes long.
It's super short, and it's a stop-motion animated, and it's about a guy working in an office, and he's starting to realize things are a bit off. Pieces start falling off of him or somebody around him. He's realizing that some people don't have legs. He's realizing that things are changing. The day changes, and then the entire office has changed. And like, there's all new equipment there. And then at one point, an ostrich tells them that this is all made up. None of this is real. And more pieces start falling off. He jumps off the stage to find a grouping of his own head.
Yeah.
A bunch of different parts for his stop motion animation character. And we eventually come to realize that the world clearly isn't real for him. He is in a commercial for, what is it? It's a office supplies company.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he realizes, oh, that's what the change is. And that's what's going on. But he's trying to find the reality in his mm-hmm. world. And there's actually the hand of the animator in the picture trying to move him around and change.
That's the cool thing is it's the whole, I thought I was watching a bootleg version.
So did I when I first started yeah. watching it. It's all through a camera lens.
Yeah.
So everything, all the movements and things like that around the picture frame that we have is someone hyperspeed
right.
Of them moving around all the characters.
Basically a camera fixed on the camera of them making the movie.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. And it's wonderfully creative. It's beautiful. The other one that I want to give a shout out to is Ice Merchants.
Hmm.
It's on YouTube. It made me cry.
Hmm.
It's beautiful. We talked about The Flying Sailor, me and you.
Oh my gosh.
One of the dumbest ones of the year. But also short, so I still put it above the one that won.
It can be bad and it can be long.
Yeah.
It can't be both.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, thank you for the analysis of the animated short.
Of course.
Of course, we've covered the short categories before on this episode or on this show in more length.
I'm not excited to talk about that one.
Okay.
When we do it in a couple of years.
Okay. Good to know. we'll skip it. So that takes us, Sam, to the ugly of the event. Okay. So I'm curious, what were some things that stood out to you as ugly elements of the ceremony?
Yeah, so one of the first songs performed was Applause, performed by Sophia Carson and Diane Warren. You made fun of this performance pretty intensely. I did not like it either.
I never even heard the song. I didn't even listen to it. It's so bad. So bad.
The performance itself wasn't very good.
Mm-hmm.
Very nasally, the song was. And then at one point, just during the middle of the performance, Sophia just stops singing and just like introduces, and this is Diane Warren, 14-time Oscar nominee. And I'm like, that just killed all the momentum in the room. What are we doing here?
Because Diane was accompanying her on the piano.
Yes.
And very rarely does she sit and actually play.
It was cool
ceremony.
That she was there.
Yeah.
You could have waited. You could have done it before the start of the song.
Right.
Or after the song.
In the middle of the song, it felt forced.
It was weird.
Yeah. Because Diane, it's one of my favorite games every year to play. Has Diane Warren won yet? And the answer is always no.
It's always going to be.
She's been nominated 6 years in a row for Best Original Song.
Wow.
And has lost every time.
Yeah.
In addition to the 8 that she'd been nominated before in her career. 14 nominations in the category, and she's lost every single time. So much so that they felt bad for her and gave her an honorary Oscar this year. So she still has the hardware to take home. She's one of the best songwriters in the business. She's written for everybody.
Yeah. I will say this was probably the worst song/performance of the night. So I'm kind of glad we got it out of the way early so we could get either the big stars in
mm-hmm.
or the fun songs in. And that was not
I was surprised they didn't open or they opened with this one of all of them.
Yeah.
Especially when the song from Everything was so weird and stupid and David Byrne sounded terrible.
He didn't sound great, but no. I love David Byrne.
Yeah. I mean, that's his shtick, right?
Yeah.
So it works for him. I think it was a better idea not like to not open up with Rihanna or something like when they did when Justin Timberlake opened the Oscars that one year.
Right.
That I mean, it worked because you're not going to get a song that's fun and exciting. Mm-hmm. But Lift Me Up is not really exciting.
That's
and Gaga performing.
There's a lot of belting this year, and I'm glad.
I wouldn't call what Rihanna does belting. I would call it whining.
Oh, wow. Wow.
She's not a powerhouse vocalist. She's not a belter. She's not Patti LuPone of the Oscars, right? She doesn't know what she's doing. She was there because she wrote a song that basically Ryan Coogler wrote and she sang.
Okay.
Just throwing that
out
there.
Ouch.
Okay. Anything else ugly that you would like to talk about?
Yeah. Can we talk about the whale winning best makeup?
I'm happy to talk about the whale winning best makeup. It's one of my good things.
It's one of your good things.
One of my good things.
I was annoyed because I didn't realize this because I haven't seen the whale yet. Mm-hmm. It's digital effects, and they showed while showing the nominees everybody applying makeup, and then they show the whale and it's some guy on a computer. Like, what the shit am I looking at?
So let's explain this and how it works.
I'm mad, Ian. Explain it to me.
As any good white man, you're mad without knowing the facts. This is actually a pioneering technique in makeup that they employed for the whale. And let me explain how it works, because basically they were trying to make this movie in the middle of COVID, and they can't make a prosthetic fat suit the way that you would normally do, which would be to do a cast of Brendan Fraser's body and mold it into a clay mold and then be able to build a suit of silicone around that. They weren't able to do that because they couldn't travel. They couldn't go anywhere. They couldn't go to him and do this.
Okay.
So that was off the picture. So what they decided to do was basically set up a studio in Brendan Fraser's garage and say, we're going to have you scan your body for us digitally.
Oh, fine. Okay.
And they ended up 3D printing his suit.
Oh, cool.
Out of silicone. And it's weighed about 210 pounds.
Jesus.
Which is, he applied that every day. They started, the first time they put everything on, face, everything, was about 5.5 hours. They got it down to about 3 hours was their record for assembling everything. And he's carrying about 210 pounds of weight on him while he's performing this.
Wow.
Now, and this is why I think it was exceptional over Elvis, because Elvis, you know, Tom Hanks is wearing a fat suit and it looks like he's wearing a fat suit, right?
Sure does.
And Elvis has some prosthetics on later, but they went down to the fingers of Brendan Fraser in this movie, which is really impressive, because each one of those parts was 3D printed and made. Where the digital side comes in is not only did they make the cast out of that 3D print, which even if you're like go and get filling for your teeth, you go and have a mold made and you cast it that way.
Right.
They did all this virtually. Okay, to make the suit for him before they started filming. But one of the cool things about the digital makeup side of things, this is where the pioneering technique comes in. Traditionally, if you're making a cast out of mold or making a mold from a cast, you can use clay and use a tool to like craft wrinkles or pores or things like that. What they were allowed to do with the digital makeup side of things is they could actually take an image of a person, zoom in up to like the corner of the eye and make that a full screen image and trace the wrinkles of that and apply that to the 3D model that they printed. So basically the suit that he made was down to the individual pores of makeup that they were applying. Your eyes are glossing over.
It's a lot, but actually it's way more impressive than I ever thought.
It's cool.
Be.
And I don't think the Academy was right in how they described it on the show, because they made it sound like, oh, they just did this with a computer, which yes, they did. They still applied it and they still had makeup artists put it on him and he still performed in it. It's not that it's all special effects.
Yeah. I wish then the clip that they showed wasn't just the computer. I wish it was them applying the suit.
Right. And this is why the technical awards are so important, why the Academy's technical awards, which actually take place on a different night, recognize this type of pioneering work.
Very cool.
Because I love the makeup artist for this movie said, you know, all the fat suits that we've you know come to know, Nutty Professor, Shallow Hal, even Gary Oldman in Dune last year, right? They're all the gimmick. They're all for the comedy effect. They're supposed to make someone look gross.
Right.
And he's like, I was trying to build this character out of love because Charlie, the character, has so much love in him.
Yeah.
And the film drew a lot of criticism because of that depiction. The ableist people were like, oh, pick a fat person to play the role. Brendan Fraser's a good actor.
Yeah,
right?
He did a great job.
He did a great job. It was an incredible performance. I think all of that played into a little bit more. I was surprised that this one makeup because I really thought it was going to be Elvis based on just more traditional approach.
Yeah.
But I thought this was interesting to learn about how this works, and I'm excited to see what the next thing they do with it. Because ultimately, you don't have the win for Brendan Fraser without the really well done makeup.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. That's a good point.
The thing that I thought was ugly about this, though, where you thought it was the actual win itself, was when they have the announcer, when they have the actual makeup artist accepting the award, and behind them on the big screen, they have basically the naked Brendan Fraser in the full fat suit. And it looked awful because there's this beautiful woman, I can't remember what her name is, but she's a beautiful gown, thanking all, you know, her mom, everybody. Mm-hmm. And there's this like fat bastard behind him.
And
and I say that not in terms of what he looks like, but he looks like fat bastard from Austin Powers.
Yeah.
At least in that particular image, which was blurry and it was not good.
Yeah. And it will be behind her in every picture for the rest of her life.
Which, granted, I'm sure she's not disappointed because it's amazing work.
Yeah.
But show like maybe a picture of her applying makeup to his face or something. Not his like body that's just open and out.
Sure.
By the way, have you seen The Whale yet?
No, I haven't.
Okay. The Whale is it's so interesting because it's not what you expect from the beginning. The first scene is like him going to town on himself in the opening scene of the movie.
Perfect.
And did not expect that. Okay. So all of that, suffice to say that the movie takes a little bit different direction than you might think it does.
Sure.
Still beautiful and the makeup is wonderful. But... Don't do the makeup artist dirty like that. A couple other things that I thought were extremely ugly. One, James Cameron and Tom Cruise don't even show up.
Yeah, that was bullshit.
So now, I didn't hear this thing that James Cameron didn't get nominated for Best Director, so he wasn't going to show up. I don't know if that was true or if that was Jimmy. He usually pokes fun at real things. Mm-hmm. And James Cameron's enough a dick to, you would think he would do that. That was stupid because he's all about being at the theater and being live. And same thing with Tom Cruise.
And that's why those jokes hit so well.
They did because the room was like, oh, hypocrisy.
Yeah.
I mean, who do they have? It's Pot and Kettle. But still, it was bad form and it looked really stupid to have the two biggest commercial movies not represented.
Yeah, I was kind of excited to see if Tom Cruise was going to be there.
And right.
I bet a lot of people were because people love Top Gun Maverick.
Right.
And he's the face. Honestly, he's the face of movies right now. So
he's probably out somewhere hiding Shelley Miscavige. I don't know what's going on.
Jeez.
But then the last thing, again, this is, I don't think Jimmy Fallon or Jimmy Kimmel's fault, but it probably is because he picked the wrong person to do it with. The Malala bit did not land. This is when he goes into the audience and he's like, which I thought was a hilarious bit, to ask Malala, who is a Nobel Peace Prize winner.
Yeah.
What did you think Chris Pine really spat on Harry Styles? Or did you think Harry Styles really spat on Chris Pine? Mm-hmm. Hilarious. She was not in on it at all.
Clearly.
And if she was, she's not an actress at all. Mm-hmm. Mind you, she was there because she was promoting Stranger at the Gate, which is the other documentary short. It just felt flat hard. Mm-hmm. And which I thought was a hilarious setup to have people that shouldn't be there like weighing in on stupid things in the film industry.
Exactly.
Hilarious bit.
Somebody of real importance.
Right.
Weighing in on something that has no importance whatsoever.
Right. And her answer was like, I only talk about peace. And it was really quiet. Like you didn't even hear it. And then he goes to Jessica Chastain and the bit continues a little bit. But that was a huge loss.
Yeah.
And then Cocaine Bear shows up again. Which again, do it once, do it twice, do it three times. But I just like, oh my gosh, what a great opportunity to just roast Malala, have her in on the joke, but she was not having it.
No, not a fan of it.
No.
I was kind of surprised on how much emphasis... Like, Cocaine Bear is a crazy name for a movie.
Yes.
And I'm happy that they're embracing it, but I didn't think it was going to get as much play as it did during the Oscars, because Elizabeth Banks came out with somebody in a bear suit.
After nearly tripping and falling on her way out, which gave us all a fright.
Well, it also feels like really Elizabeth Banks. Like, was that a real thing or was that...
I think she's actually that uncoordinated.
She's just goofy, yeah.
I love her trying to play the director now.
Yes.
I mean, I'm really curious to see how this career transition happens for her.
I hope it works.
Me too. I have all the best for her. I just think it's hilarious that this is the movie that she chooses to step on the stage with.
Yes, I love it.
But I love the gimmick.
I did too.
And it wasn't over the top for Kimmel, which he's been able to do in the past. So he's a pretty good start in my mind.
Overall, what did you think of this year's Oscars?
Loved it. Loved it. It was entertaining. It moved. The pace was actually pretty quick for as long as it went over. I think it went over like 35 minutes.
Yeah.
The winners did not surprise me. The only thing that surprised me was costume design. By the way, another history maker, Ruth E. Carter, is the first black woman to win more than one Oscar.
So cool.
Which is really cool. I don't get why she won it, because she did the same costume 6 years
ago.
Very
similar, yeah.
But that's just a personal opinion, even though I think her previous win was well-deserved.
Oh, absolutely.
Because those costumes are incredible and insane. So that was my only really surprise. I think there was kind of a gasp in the room, I think, when her name was announced, because, again, that was so expected to be Catherine Martin for Elvis, that it was kind of an ups. And if not her, Babylon, of course, for costume design.
Oh, the Babylon costumes were so good,
right,
too.
So that was my biggest surprise of the night. But again, expected Everything Everywhere to win most of the stuff.
Same.
Again, as you know, not my favorite movie of the year, but I recognize Kraft when I see it. Mm-hmm. I think it was great.
Cool.
That's what about you overall?
I loved it. I thought this was one of the better Oscars that we've seen together and we've mm-hmm. reviewed together. It did flow seemingly very well. It might be that I was a little inebriated while we were watching. Hopefully unnoticeable to all of our guests, but maybe a little bit noticeable.
They'll know now.
They'll absolutely know now.
They don't listen to the show.
That makes me feel better.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I thought it worked really well. I was very much impressed with Jimmy Kimmel. I was nervous that we were going to get into too much dumb stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like we didn't go overboard. I will say, starting with Emily Blunt and Dwayne Johnson, I was nervous because their stuff did not land. Especially, they're probably promoting Jungle Cruise 2.
I thought they were good.
Another Disney one. But their whole bit was about dragging shit out.
Right.
And it was like, oh.
Make that joke later in the show.
Make it way later in the show. Not the first category.
You're not going to open with Amy, Maya, and Tina ever again. Like, that was we strike gold but once in our lives, Sam.
That's such a good point.
Yes.
Thank you all so much for listening to our 2023 Oscars post show.
Ta-da!
The 2022 Oscar season is officially over.
It's done.
The 96th Academy Awards have yet to be scheduled, but we plan to be back here to talk about them as well. And soon we will announce our best movies of 2022. We are always very late to the party on that one. But
we're peasants. It takes us a while to watch them.
Yeah,
movies.
We want to be able to watch everything.
And a question, Sam.
Yes.
Should we do the Oscars live next year as an episode?
It was suggested at the party. Based on the comments flying around, it seems like a poor decision.
You can edit that out. No one wants
not
to listen
if it's
to
live.
No one wants to listen. We could. I don't know. We figure it out.
Maybe
I would watch my mouth for
we'll
a little.
We'll try
bit.
Something.
But if you need more Oscar content from Sam and I, if you're not getting enough in your daily briefing, find us on Time Sensitive. You can find our entire catalog of Under the Radar film reviews, some of which have gone on to win Oscars, be nominated for Oscars, including RRR this year.
Yes.
And then you can find our other episodes like this one featuring our Oscar recaps, post-shows, pre-shows, all that on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you're currently listening to us.
We want to hear from you. Tell us what your favorite and least favorite Oscar moments were on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Search Time Sensitive or follow us at TS Movie Pod. That's at TSMOVIEPOD.
And a quick favor, if you enjoy Time Sensitive, please leave us a quick rating and review on iTunes. It means a lot, and it's a nice way to let other people discover our show.
Hooray for Oscar! Until next year. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sam.
And I'm Ian.
Take care.
Hi, I'm Mark, and I'm one of the hosts of Massive Late Fee. Do you remember Blockbuster? Well, we do, and we racked up a lot of late fees there. That's why we're glad there's things like Netflix, Hulu, and Blockbuster has died. Mostly because of us. We cover streaming shows and pretty much whatever we want. Join us every Thursday as we talk TV and movies on Massive Late Fee. You can find us at Massive Late Fee on Twitter, Massive Late Fee on Facebook. You can email the show at MassiveLateFee@gmail.com, and you can find us at MySpace, Massive Late Fee. Massive Late Fee, the best podcast we can think of.